is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
After 9 o'clock on a Thursday, which means it's time for the MGO Blog Roundtable brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
And it is time for the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Always a treat to have the fellas in studio, starting with Brian Cook right across from me. Brian, how are you this morning?
I'm well. I'm good.
So, you know, the guys were mad. They said, you know, you have a T-shirt with your face on it.
I do.
Screaming that is a hot commodity, and you have not given away any T-shirts to your friends.
When you order the magazine, there's a level at which you get the T-shirt. And everybody else who ordered the magazine at that level managed to get a T-shirt, and they didn't. So
I had an article in there.
Not,
I bought several anyway.
We're not.
Seth didn't pay me, and I still don't get a T-shirt.
You refuse to get paid, Craig.
You refuse to get paid.
That's not on Brian.
I'm paying you, and you're like, I hate you. Spit on this, and then you rip the check up.
That's not true. I give it back to your son. He hasn't told you that yet. He hasn't told you that he's got a big bank account, that I've been putting money in his account. But there you go.
So quit lying about me and start lying about yourself, Seth. There we go.
There we are.
Craig Ross. We're off to a good start.
Have you written, Craig Ross?
Right now I'm writing almost. In fact, I'm pretty much done with a book that Seth is going to edit called Football. Well, right now the working title is Football When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth. And it's a history of Michigan football prior to 1900, which has been great fun for me to write.
Biography of Trotsky.
You know, actually, this is when we walked in today, Brian said he wanted to talk about Rosa Luxemburg.
I don't know
whether
what that
she
means.
Was a revisionist or not, which was a hot issue around this table. Brian,
I know a lot of things, but I don't know what that means.
So Ed Fang knows what it means, right?
No. Okay. No, Craig confuses me.
Craig is about as confusing as trying to figure out what this offensive line is doing on run plays.
Yeah. So, more important than anything offensive line related, I got an email last week after the visit from you guys, and my friend Josh emailed, and he said, I have seen Trotsky's ice pick in person, for real, and its effect was overwhelming, just like the metaphor Craig used it for last week.
Wow.
Now there's...
I thought he got axed to death. I thought it was an axe.
It was a sort of a combination.
Oh, a combo.
Axe and ice.
I mean, we need to like document the first that Craig Ross has done on sports radio, right? He had the geneticist. What was his name?
Tofrim Lysenko.
Lysenko. Mm-hmm. No one has ever talked about Lysenko on sports radio. And now axes and Frida Kahlo and Corona.
All right.
Trotsky.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Luxembourg.
So let's dive in, guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I think with a game like this, you know, you can maybe dig into some of the intricacies.
Got to get in the weeds.
Yeah, get in the weeds a little bit because it's, you know, they destroyed them 49-3. So,
well, but let's take that seriously though, right? I mean, they struggled against Cincinnati and Air Force last year.
They did.
You want to pound a team like Western?
Absolutely.
And they did it.
Absolutely.
And we should take that seriously. I mean, that is a good thing.
One of the ways they did it was running the football, over 300 yards. The offensive line, you know, Ed said he and Jim said they both saw progress. They came out with the same line like they said they would.
Coach Warner.
I'm
sorry. But if you want to keep saying Ed, that's cool.
No, don't do that.
It's like I know something about the offensive line.
Don't bias me against one of Michigan's coaches.
right. Okay. So Ed Warner said he saw progress. But, you know, this is going to be the competition is really an ongoing thing. I mean, he left the door wide open for changes if he sees, you know, regression or guys stagnant, if he sees guys behind them getting better. And so we got a chance to see the young guys in that game. Let's start off earlier in the game when they're running the football really, really effectively.
Yeah.
one of the so the first big run. I mean, you I think that Ben Mason is a superhero, man.
Oh yeah, Ben Mason.
That was a great block.
He got a +3 for me on that block, which is a rarity. But when you blow a guy out like that and catch someone up when you're awake, that's going to be a big play. So those blocks are so rare, I tend to remember them. So, like, you know, Patrick Omame against Notre Dame kind of block. So
yeah, so, man, I you know, after that play, and you don't want to read too much into one play, but I wasn't surprised. It's like, you know what, this is what this crew,
yeah,
even though these are different, a few different components, is what this crew does well. You know, you hat on hat, know who you're supposed to get, and boom, running back breaks a few tackles, he's off. So then the next big run, though, and this is where I want the football X's and O's, football IQ, to kind of come out and water it down a bit for the radio, Brian, please. Water it down a bit for the radio. As I was watching in the press box,
yeah,
you know, you taking notes, I look up, I see Bredesen pull, I see him going down the sideline. I said, oh, man, this must have been a pin and pull. Throw on the tape.
Sure.
And they say, oh, this is inside zone.
Right.
There were some zone elements to it.
Right.
But there were some gap elements to it as well. Break it down.
Okay, so it's called down G, or, I mean, there's different
names
for it. And I call it down G just because that's what I call it.
I think Harbaugh actually may have called it that in some prior writing.
And
or
have you seen Michigan do it?
Yes. It's not that uncommon. It's a good play to run when you have some guys who can do power well, but you don't want to tip off the linebacker level. So on a traditional power play, you're pulling the backside guard.
Right.
Down G pulls the front side.
Wait, backside. You might want to tell people what backside is.
So the backside is the you're so on power, you're attacking a gap.
Right.
And that gap is usually outside the tackle. So if you're away from that on the backside of the line, then you're on the backside.
Away from the direction of the ball.
So if it's left, then the backside guard is on when you.
Right.
That's right.
So usually you play.
So hopefully we're explaining this, you can follow along.
So you pull that guy, and power is a very, very common play, and so people will check to see if that guy's pulling and then react based on that, which is called keying. So they key on the backside guard, and then you get heavy linebacker flow to the point of attack. And on these plays, you're pulling the front side guard. You're attacking pretty much the same.
On these plays, you mean on down G?
On down G. You're attacking pretty much the same place, but because you're not pulling the backside guard, those linebackers on the backside aren't flowing so hard. So, because it looks like inside zone to them. So they're like, okay.
Treating it like zone on the backside.
Right, yeah, they are. And so you're looking at this, and you're like, okay, this could definitely cut back to me. I need to be careful. I need to see where the running back is going. And only after he commits to the gap are you really running. And at that point, Cesar Ruiz is already out to cut you off, if there's even anyone there.
Yeah, there was one play where on the 67-yard run by Higdon, Bredesen ended up taking two guys out.
Yeah.
On his pull. I mean, he's pulling to the sideline. He's pulling to the play side.
You can say that Bredesen took
Or there out. Was a mistake by right. Western that took themselves
there's,
out on
there's
one
no
of those
way
guys.
That a defensive end and defensive tackle right. should be next to each other.
Right.
That's bad.
Right. And as Ruiz is running downfield,
nobody to block.
There's no one to block. Right. So, yeah, that was a mistake by Western, but it...
So
that,
when you run a lot of power, and when you run a lot of inside zone in Michigan, those are their base run plays. Down G is a thing that you can add that doesn't really complicate things too much for the offensive line, because most of them are just doing the same things that they would be doing on one of their base plays, but complicates it for the linebacker level for the opposition. So I think we're going to see it going forward. Probably not as much of a steady diet as we saw this time, because it is a play that does kind of rely on you know, catching people off guard. Because if that linebacker level
they wore him out.
Flows really hard, then it's tough for you to get out on them, and then you get over the top, and it's inferior to power if, like, you just told people what was coming.
Yeah.
So
the one upside, I mean, if you're running power O, the backside linebacker can flow with the backside guard,
right.
And if he's good enough, he can bust the play up. But the advantage of down G is that it's harder for the linebacker to do that. The play tends to be a little to read it, and it's also a little quicker. The ball carrier is going to be slightly quicker to the line of scrimmage, so it's a little more difficult for the backside backer to get over and bust that play up.
Yeah,
now, there's other things you can do, but
often on power, the back kind of wants to take a step where he's not going anywhere, and he wants to delay to let the play kind of set up. Mm-hmm. And down G is like, let's get through the line.
Right.
So it's a tweak, but it's one that fits with what Michigan does, and it's a good thing to have in the playbook.
Is it going to work against Wisconsin?
I mean, if they sprinkle it in, I think it'll be a good thing to get on against the Badgers two or three times.
Okay.
But it's not something that they're going to run a dozen times every game.
And Michigan hasn't. I mean, I think looking at Brian's UFR from the Notre Dame game, I think they ran it once for 2 yards against Notre Dame, down G. And I don't know if they ran it at all last year. I mean, I maybe, but I don't
remember. I'm sure they did. It's a pretty common play that would, like, if you didn't run it, that would be a, kind of a form of malpractice. So it's not like they're reinventing the wheel here. It's just, you know, they're expanding the repertoire.
Well, I mean, but think about it. They didn't run counter until halfway through the season last year. So, you know, I mean,
are you trying to make Brian mad?
Things go dormant for a while, and then they come up with a variant that.
Well, and that's something that you want to be doing as a coach. You want to be putting this stuff on tape, and then every week you want to come out with something that is not quite what the opposition has seen. So this week there was a lot of down G, and that'll get incorporated into the base offense. And you're going to see a little bit of it going forward, but not as much as we saw against Western.
So I'm interested in you reconciling the performance with their grade being lower in this game than it was in the Notre Dame game.
So I have a run blocking grade, and that encompasses the offensive line, the tight ends, and the fullbacks. And it was a really good number for the Notre Dame game, and it was a little bit worse against Western Michigan. Part of that is that I thought the backs were very good against Western. You know, you put Chris Evans in the open field, and he's going to turn someone's ankles into jelly. You know, Higdon had a long run where he just outran a safety angle. So that stuff, you know, helps your ground game without actually being blocking. And then a large part of that was just the fact that, you know, Michigan benefited from the opposition. So when you bust huge, my run blocking grade isn't going to give Bredesen 6 points for taking out two guys, right? So that's on Western, and their inability to fit gaps and stuff was a part of Michigan's success on the ground.
And the backs made better cuts in this game.
I thought that they both had kind of iffy games against Notre Dame. Not great, but not bad. And they really maximize their opportunities against Western.
734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@wtk.com. So we'll get to a break. One of the things that we were asked to get into is what you thought of the backup lineman. Understanding, and I think this is maybe
Believe
lost.
Me, I knew that was coming.
Yeah, this is lost on some people that they were going against Western's backups.
Yeah.
So, qualifying our statements about their performance with that ahead of time. But we'll get into that when we return here.
Now time for more of the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The Ticket brought to you by Home Shore Lending. Home Shore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
And we are back, folks. MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. So Ed Fang, PowerRank.com. What are the odds for the Lions versus the 49ers this week? What do your numbers tell you?
While I'm looking this up, let's just note that everyone's going to flip out about one bad game.
Oh, my God.
Everyone's going to flip out.
Yes. When you're a coach. No, it's not. It's not one game if you're a Lions fan.
I didn't flip out about
it. It's not
Lions.
One game
they
if you're a
Lions
fan.
They made the playoffs last year.
I took it in stride.
Darius Slay's not hurt.
No. I said earlier, I don't feel patriot-like. I feel pretty unpatriotic right now. I'm just saying, I don't feel like a patriot.
Sam, one game. 35% chance
of beating. You had a coach, as we get back to Michigan football, but you had a coach who looked despondent on the sideline.
Well, he knew he was going to get trashed all week. What do you want him to do?
Who, when the camera pans to him and they miss a field goal, I give up. What do you? That's what they caught him saying. He said, "I give up."
That's the rational thing to do.
And so, what do you expect?
Why don't you?
Of course, your team is going to give up.
Follow
when you
his
give
lead.
Up.
You know, the Browns.
I hear you.
The Browns had a big victory this week.
They did. Wait. Screw the Browns.
So remember,
man.
remember the Niners. The Niners.
I understand.
35% chance to win on the road. Remember, the Niners didn't look great. Jimmy G was supposed to come in, light up the NFL.
He was not good. The Niners played the Vikings, right?
Wasn't the Vikings?
Why are you talking about this?
Yes. Because if they go 0-2, the season's over.
The season was over before it began.
It probably was over.
Why does anyone
probably
talk about the Lions? Stop it.
Because
it gives us some perspective.
They should have beaten the Jets.
For all the hand-wringing that we hear about Michigan, this ought to give you awesome perspective, right? Because, a Lions fan, at least you have some semblance of hope with Michigan. You have none with the Lions.
So why?
All right, now let's get back to the
offensive
line.
Let's talk in 5 weeks about the Lions.
No, let's not. Let's not ever talk about the Lions again.
Matt Patricia was not the guy from
the
beginning.
It's one game. We can talk again in five weeks.
So tell me the Belichick disciple.
The Kuala Lumpur Lions.
The Belichick disciple that has gone on to do...
No, there aren't any.
Incidentally, do you know how the Lions became the Lions?
Or Bangkok.
Because it used to be the Detroit.
What? The Bangkok Lions. Just move them as far away as possible.
Brian has said this. It used to be the Detroit Wolverines. But the Detroit Wolverines in the NFL had Benny Friedman, the greatest player in the history of the game.
Calcutta.
And Wellington Mara wanted him. But the Lions wouldn't trade Benny Friedman. So what... Wellington Mara did was buy the Detroit Wolverines, cut every player, kept Benny Friedman, and took him to the Giants. And so then the people in Detroit bought the Portsmouth Lions. Portsmouth, Ohio had an NFL team. They bought the Portsmouth Lions for $100 because Portsmouth had never paid their entry fee into the NFL. And so they were able to, for $100, get the Portsmouth Lions. That's, I think, the story of the Detroit Lions. And that's probably why they still suck.
Gotcha.
I warn you.
Yeah, I mean, how you come up with this stuff, how you retain this stuff, I should say, Craig. Wow. Anyway.
What a good use of our time.
Yeah.
So sorry, Brian.
It was a 49-3 thrashing. We can spare 5 minutes. All right, so now let's get to the backup offensive line. Backup offensive line for Michigan.
They blew guys off the ball.
They were incredible. But they were playing against who knows?
Meatballs. You say meatballs.
Meatballs, yeah. They were playing against meatballs.
So the backups for Western.
Yeah. And, I mean, you've got Honingford, I think, driving a guy down the field about 30 yards.
That was good.
Hudson, and they were all good.
They did very well in a limited amount of time. Mm-hmm. I like Drew Wilson as well. Like, he set up his blocks well.
Yeah, that's...
He actually got in earlier in the game. I mean, they rave about him in pass pro. He flipped a guy.
He had one of those cup blocks where the guy lands on his head, which is like, ooh, I hope he's okay. Not really.
Oh, man, it's Western, Brian. Come on.
Yeah, well, you know, that guy probably deserved it. I don't know. Come on.
Probably deserved it.
No, but he had a really good pass block incident.
And he ran the ball well, too. But, of course, he was running through big gaps.
But, you know, you're looking for, like, how quickly does this guy make decisions? Are his cuts decisive? Is he cutting right off the butt?
Of
his offensive lineman? I thought you could.
You thought you could?
I mean, his decisions weren't hard. Yeah. I'll grant that. It was a good start. A good start for his career.
All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing.
Hudson and Mayfield are the main ones we're looking at.
Yeah, and so Mayfield, like, drives a 220-pound guy 10 yards downfield. And even though that's probably not a very good player, that's a little something. And Hudson, you know, pancakes a guy and kicks a guy out.
See, I feel certainly, you know, performing well is even against the backups is something worthy of note. But the biggest deal to me is that they just got on the field. I don't care who. It could have been walk-ons. And just for them to get on the field, I think, is a thing for those guys.
Well, you know, when you're running so many waggles against Western Michigan that Western Michigan can, like, be like, I know this is coming, that does say something about your pass protection. So I feel like, I think I had a total of 14 pass protection points available in this game, which is an incredibly low number. Yeah. So even against Western Michigan, Michigan was really, really not going to just drop back. Mm-hmm. They did it like a few times. They got away with it, but it kind of felt like that's what they felt they were doing. So if that's the case against the Western Michigan football Broncos, then I don't know
about that.
Yeah, and I felt like when Western was getting pressure, I mean, they were sending a lot of blitzes, right? There was a lot of free guys kind of coming off.
No, I mean, they're because they didn't get any pressure because there were like three passes from the pocket the whole game.
Right.
So, like, you know, there's the one throw to McCune where Bredesen's guy kind of spun through and...
No, that was, I think, wasn't that Runyon's guy?
No, that was the left side guy.
It was Bredesen, like the second drive?
Well, yeah, it was Bredesen who, anyway, it doesn't really matter. It's that, you know, they get a little bit of pressure there, but that's like one of like maybe four incidents. And then whenever they're on the waggle, you know, you've got Patterson making these incredible throws that are 8 yards downfield because he's got a guy in his grill who's expecting this play because Michigan just rolled out all last week and they're rolling out all this week. So if that's the case and they're not even willing to like have some dropbacks, get some pass protection, actually against a real opponent, I kind of feel like maybe there's an opportunity for change at tackle.
I've been of the mind that the line that we see now will not be the line that we see come November. My opinion.
Well, I mean, that's your opinion and probably the opinion of literally everybody listening to this broadcast.
Let's go. Craig, what do you think?
Well, I was on a different spot. I was, do you know, last week I conflated North Texas with North Texas State. But I just thought, as a redemption, does anyone know that?
I don't think anyone's going to hold that against you.
Do you know the nickname of North Texas and their stadium?
They're the Armadillos, right?
No, that's the unnecessary roughness school, which does not actually exist.
Yeah, actually, North Texas is the Mean Green.
Yeah, the Mean Green.
And they play in Gerald J. Ford Stadium.
And they blew SMU out.
That's correct, 46-23. And they also were ahead 9-0 to TCU last week, but lost 42-12.
Hey, so SMU looked great for two drives.
They did, really. That's what I was going to ask Ed. I mean, is SMU any good?
I mean, my numbers have them about the same as Western.
Okay.
So they're, figure out why we're 35-point favorites instead
Sonny
of 28.
Dykes, but. Sonny Dykes, Sonny Kevin Dykes. Sumlin, Matt Patricia, they all inherited decent teams that look terrible right now. Terrible. So
Who's Matt Patricia?
Exactly.
Let's not go back.
Exactly. But all those guys inherited decent teams that, boy, if you are a fan of them, and I know some SMU guys that are coming up, it's like, you coming up for this game? Ooh.
It's a big house.
You know, they're experience not expecting them to win. They're just going to...
But it's
sit in front
be,
of me.
Well,
and
I mean, it's be a bloodletting.
I mean, it's another game where Michigan needs to pound them 49-3-ish, and I think they will. Would be.
I think they will. So, Shea, give me your thoughts on Shea's performance.
You know, he hit like three really really good passes, I thought, and you know the route to the sideline to Oliver Martin was just kind of like I didn't know he could do that. Yeah, nice play by Martin too. He has another strike down the sideline to Peoples-Jones. He has a corner out to Peoples-Jones. And then Nico Collins, you know, that was an easy throw. But one of the things that leapt out at me when I was reviewing his film from last year is he takes those easy throws and he makes some easy catches, which not every quarterback does. And so if you get a guy open 40 yards downfield, he's going to, like, take a little bit off and make sure he doesn't miss the throw and give the guy an opportunity to make the catch. So, you know, I thought... He was about as good as he was against Notre Dame, and he was very good against Notre Dame, except for that interception. So when he's kept clean, he's gonna really do some things.
Yeah.
And that's the only question.
Yeah, two of the weaker passes, where it was one that was behind Oliver Martin, was catchable, but it was a hard catch.
Yeah.
And then there was one over a slant over the middle to Grant Perry, which was high.
And he missed the one to McCune, but he missed three throws. And you could quibble about actually the long ball that was the touchdown. He probably underthrew that a little bit, but I think that was
intentional.
Yeah, I think that's intentional.
Okay.
Because he was so wide open, he just wanted to make sure.
And he got hit on the McCune throw, so like he didn't get hit a lot, but he definitely got disrupted in his motion. So.
Right, and he had five incompletions. Another one was one he was throwing away, and the other one was the one to Grant Perry that I thought was a perfect throw on the third and long. So
it was a little high.
If he was throwing to Zach Gentry, that would have been a good throw. But when you're throwing a guy foot shorter than that, like he leapt up and he can only get one hand to it. That's a high throw. Like. If you get two hands to a ball, I kind of expect you to catch it. But if you can only get the one, then...
Right. So, I want to spend some time on defense on the other side. Defense played, the entirety of this game, like they played the second half against the last one. Granted, against a much you know, a lesser opponent. But still, I was encouraged by how assignment sound they were in that game. I want to get your take on it.
Welcome back to the MGO Below Groundtable, brought to you by Home Shore Lending here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The Ticket, the Home Shore Lending segment is brought to you again by Home Shore Lending, a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
And so I was just having a spirited conversation with a high school coach, and we were going back and forth. I said, man, you know, I think the best corner on this team as far as the season has been Brandon Watson.
He was the defensive player of the game for the team last week.
I thought he was outstanding in the Western game.
Yeah, and they kept trying to hit him deep specifically. Like for whatever reason, Western was like, we're gonna run the ball a few times and now we're gonna go deep. And we don't care if the guy's covered, we're just gonna go deep. And the guy was covered very frequently, and the reason that he was covered was often Brandon Watson. And the one thing that he didn't do that a couple of his teammates did is get grabby. So Hill got a penalty. I don't think Long got a penalty, but he wasn't targeted as much. But he was able to almost intercept a pass. He had a couple other excellent instances of coverage. So he's pretty good.
Yeah. But all of our corners have played very well, really, in my opinion. I mean,
there have been a couple of bumps for the other two guys so far this year. But
I mean, which leads to a really spectacular stat. Which is out there for Michigan, and that's that so far this year, our net yards per pass attempt on defense is 3.88, which is about the best number I've ever seen ever. Now, it is only two games against one meatball team and one meatball quarterback, but it's still...
He had to wait a week to look like a meatball, right?
Yeah.
Good grief.
I know.
Well, that's what's going to be Notre Dame season. It's like, can Wimbush hit a 30-yard fade, and that's how we move the ball. And the answer against Michigan was unfortunately yes.
Yeah. But in any event, that number is unbelievable. And in fact, you were talking about Wisconsin. I mean, I've talked about this in the past, I guess early on in the seasons. And right now, our numbers on net yards per pass attempt are right at the Pantheon, which is surprising, I think, given the, you know, now, and it wasn't all
just... Was it surprising?
Because we, you know, one, we're 1-1. Two is we've got a game against a good defense, Notre Dame, and we're still plus 3.10, which is probably in the top, even right now, even with limited data points, probably in the top 10 in the country, and maybe better than that. And when you look at Wisconsin playing two weaker teams, they're only 2.50, which means at home we're 6 points better. So right now. I think there's some reasons for optimism and hope. Let's, you know.
I mean, I kind of expected this pass defense to be good, right? I mean, they were ninth in my adjusted yards per attempt, eighth in my adjusted yards per attempt last year. And that would have been a lot better if it wouldn't have been for some of the big plays that they allowed. I'm sure that they were probably a lot better than success rate. And I mean, I expect this. This is what this defense is supposed to do. You have three corners coming back that all have experience.
Okay, but we got to talk about the guy who actually had a game against Western, who was a bit of a surprise.
Carlo Kemp,
exactly. So Carlo Kemp comes in, this is his first start, and he's playing a meatball team, and he does about as well as you could expect for a first-time starter, even against a meatball team. And what he offers that, you know, it didn't seem like was getting offered up last week was push. So Rashawn Gary gets a sack, and a large reason he gets a sack is because Kemp is right where you might expect the quarterback to go. The quarterback tries to escape like he did against Notre Dame, and he's blocked. And that gives Gary the ability to actually pay off his pass rush. And it was very difficult for Western to block him, more so than Brian Monet, who's playing most of this game next to him. And so that, I think that's promising. And I think that's a guy who I expect to start next week. And I hopefully he can kind of round into that last starter on the defensive line that Michigan really lacked against Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's interesting because we haven't talked about that at all, but that was exactly my impression, and I think the coaches didn't really talk Kemp up a whole lot. They talked Michael Dwumfor up, and Dwumfor wasn't terrible, I don't think, by any stretch, but I think Kemp was able to get penetration, and he's not Mo Hurst yet. We'll probably never see another Mo Hurst, in my opinion, but he was really good in this game.
It took Mo Hurst 4 years to
become
be
Mo Hurst. That's so true too.
He was pretty Mo Hurst as a sophomore. Yeah. But he wasn't fully weaponized.
Yeah, he couldn't be an every down player as a sophomore.
I know, but like you could tell what was coming.
Oh yeah, you knew his get off. You just couldn't teach that.
Yeah. So but, Kemp isn't the same kind of guy. Yeah. But he's, you know.
What made Mo special though was that get off, and then he got to the point where you can leave him on that field. He got big enough and strong enough in his final 2 years where you didn't have to take him. He wasn't just a pass rush guy. Mm-hmm. Now he's an every down guy. These guys, like you said, none of them. Dwumfer maybe sort of kind of poor man's get off.
He may get there.
Maybe he'll get there, but none of them have that kind of quickness. But they are bigger.
But
all of them are
Michigan
bigger.
Michigan doesn't need Carlo Kemp to be a guy who gets a lot of like pass rush right up the gut. Mm-hmm. They need him to be a guy who, when the quarterback gets flushed by Winovich or Gary, he's able to either sack himself or tackle. Like he doesn't have to force the issue himself. He just has to clean it up. Yeah, I thought he did a good job of that against Western.
Yeah, I agree. I thought he had a really nice game.
Yeah, and I feel like they're using, I mean, Kemp kind of came in as an end, right? And he's being pushed into this tackle position. We saw Winovich and like Quiddy Pay kind of lining up over the guards a bunch too. So do you feel like they're moving some of these guys that were end type guys into the tackle?
I mean, the Pay Winovich stuff is just pass rush
situational stuff.
Yeah, there's no any defensive end gets moved in, it will be Gary, and I don't think that's going to be that common.
We touched on that at the end of the last hour. Yeah, that's, you know, if you looked at that and thought that was some sort of remedy to the injuries, it's not. It's pure pass rush. This game this week, larger margin of victory?
I mean, it's hard to predict more than 46 points.
No, it's not. More than 46 points.
It's going to be more than 46. I mean, Michigan should win the game, and hopefully they'll win it easily, and we'll see some progression perhaps
is if we see maybe a little bit of rotation at offensive tackle. That's
earlier, kind of earlier
like,
in the
you
game.
You know, like,
I mean, I'm not holding
a couple of first half drives, drop back and pass, see what happens. That's probably going to be the most interesting thing from this game.
I do want to shout out my favorite play. Mike Spath actually tweeted this out a couple of days ago, I think, but it was Devin Bush's sack. And it wasn't the sack. It was the absolute just striking of the guard by Josh Ross. Like, man, a violent football player. And I talked to...
You mean the stick on fourth and one?
Yeah. I mean, that play was made by Josh Ross.
Yeah, and Ross had a couple of other impressive plays. He was able to out sideline to sideline Devin Bush on one play and make a tackle. I think he's probably going to take the starting weak side job.
Hey, my question for next week is, who is a greater human, Smedley Butler or Herm Edwards?
Herm Edwards has got to win over Michigan State.
Just say words.
Hey,
just words.
All right, folks, that'll do it for today's show. It better.